The Bush administration argued in favor of invading Iraq in part as a way to replace a dictatorial regime with a democratic government. Many Iraqis have responded to the demise of Saddam Hussein's rule with cautious celebrations and street demonstrations calling for a quick departure of American and British occupational forces. Many of those demonstrations have been inspired and encouraged by Islamic fundamentalists promoting the creation of a religious state in Iraq. That effort gained force and leadership this weekend with the return to Iraq of Ayatollah Muhammad Bakr al-Hakim. He had been in exile in Iran for 23 years, and upon his return, the religious leader denounced the idea of Western-style democracy in Iraq, a country with a long history of secular government. Middle East historian Bernard Lewis is the author of The Crisis of Islam, Holy War and Unholy Terror. He joins us from the campus of Princeton University. Thanks for joining us, Professor Lewis.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be with you.
Do you think that bringing democracy to Iraq may result in bringing an Islamic fundamentalist government to Iraq?
There is always that danger, but I think if it is handled properly, the danger can be averted.
How do you handle it properly?
By not being in too much of a hurry. The holding of a free general election is the culmination, not the inauguration, of a process of democratization. And remember, our own democracies in the Western world took centuries to develop. Democracy doesn't come in a sort of do-it-yourself kit and a manual of instructions. It has to be built up gradually over time. And I have no doubt at all that the Iraqi people are perfectly capable of doing this.
Given the fact that Iraq does have a history of secular government, have things changed in Iraqi society that might actually foster the possibility of a fundamentalist government?
I think the main danger of a fundamentalist government comes from the East, that is to say, from Iran. You know, when we started talking about bringing democracy to Iraq, a number of people expressed the fear that it wouldn't work. There was another fear, less openly expressed, but more deeply felt, that it would work. A successful democratic regime in Iraq would offer an example and therefore also a threat to a lot of other countries in the general area. And some of these would view that prospect with alarm and will do what they can to prevent it.
Your earlier book was entitled What Went Wrong, Western Impact and Middle Eastern Response. Are there lessons, do you think, from past Western occupations in Iraq that could be useful now as a new government is built?
Oh, there are always lessons from the past. The question is how one draws them and how one applies them. But the occupation of Iraq was a very brief one. Remember, Iraq was part of the Ottoman Empire, an Islamic empire, and before that of other Islamic states. The period of British rule was indirect and brief. Indirect in the sense that it was a mandate, and therefore there was an Iraqi government. It was a parliamentary monarchy, British style, and on the whole, it didn't work too badly. The period of foreign rule in the Middle East was very brief. Effectively, it began after the First World War and ended after the Second World War. And the problems of the region began long before the imperialists arrived and continued unabated after their departure.
Historian Karen Armstrong, in her book Islam, has written that state affairs are the stuff of religion itself, so political well-being is a matter of supreme importance. In other words, Islam is politics or nothing. Do you agree?
Well, that was a statement made by Khomeini. Islam is politics or it's nothing. I don't think I would like to go that far. But certainly the relationship between government and religion is much stronger and more basic in Islam than it is in Christianity. Christians are told in the Gospels to render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's and unto God that which is God. In other words, you recognize two authorities in the world. That particular distinction doesn't occur in Islamic history. The Prophet Muhammad was not crucified like Jesus or forbidden to enter his promised land like Moses. He conquered his promised land and set up a state, so that from the very beginning, the sacred history that are at the core of identity of Muslims everywhere in the world depict the Prophet not only as prophet and teacher and guide, but also as a head of state. So there is a sort of interpenetration of government and religion in Islam which does not exist in the Christian world. But having said that, there's no reason why this shouldn't be compatible with some form of democracy.
Bernard Lewis is the Cleveland E. Dodge Professor of Near Eastern Studies Emeritus at Princeton University. His book, The Crisis of Islam, Holy War, and Unholy Terror, is published by Random House. Thank you very much for your time, Professor.
Thank you.